Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Remedial Magic Podcast. As always, my name is Brady, and with me is my brother Baylor and our good friend Delbert. We got a special episode today, guys.
True.
A different episode than our norm, as we promised at the beginning of this season. We'd have several episodes that are different from our norm, and so I'm excited to get into this one. How are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm doing well. I read this book today and enjoyed it. So I'm excited to, one, talk to the author and then talk about it.
And by this book, obviously you mean the fan fiction Bagsy Beetlehorn and the Thorned Gauntlet, right?
Indeed, indeed.
It would be incredibly upsetting if you had read an entirely different fan fiction than the one we're going to be talking about.
I would also be upset about that.
We are going to be discussing a different fan fiction today, taking a 1 week break from Alex Quick. This one's called Bagsy Beetlehorn and the Thorned Gauntlet. And we are going to be discussing it a little bit between the three of us, but we also have interviewed the author of Bagsy Beetlehorn, and it was, much like our last interview with Sam Gabriel, a really enjoyable time and a fun conversation. So I think it'll be worth it for the audience to hear, and I'm excited about that. But first, we have some business to take care of. Everybody go leave us a review. Follow us on social media. You can find all that in our link tree below in the description. I don't know why I say below like this is a YouTube video.
I think it is below, like, the play button, though.
I guess. But it's not below me. Anyways, follow our social media in the link tree below. And then, Dober, you have a few things you want to talk about.
Couple things, yeah. Not a few. That's a different number.
Semantics.
Right. Couple Harry Potter news stories breaking over the last couple days.
Anything tragic and or controversial?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Quidditch is no longer Quidditch.
It's called... Have you heard of this, Baylor? Have you heard of this?
Nope. This is the first time hearing about this, and so you definitely have gathered my attention.
Perfect. Well, the real-life, non-flying muggle version of Quidditch that is played on plenty of college campuses and some social events, and they might even have competitions somewhere.
Apparently a much more popular sport than I realized.
Way more popular than I realized is now quadball instead of Quidditch.
Quadball.
Yep.
That sounds pretty similar to quad pot.
True. Alex Quick did it first, but who did it better?
No one.
No, but the quoted reason is that it's to distance themselves from JKR's comments from 2 years ago. The heavily Reddit theorized reason is this allows them to sell merchandise and, you know, sell tickets and sell all sorts of stuff without it being tied to JKR and Warner Brothers and having to have those royalties on top of it. So it gives them a lot of freedom in expanding that way.
Well, I find the explanation that it distances them from J.K. Rowling a little suspect, to be honest. And the reason I'm saying that is, obviously we know of the controversy. We don't need to go over it again on this podcast. But I gotta tell you, when I hear the word Quidditch, my brain doesn't go, like, the alarm bells in my brain don't sound, oh no, J.K. Rowling, right? Instead, I think of, oh no, a sport with the worst rule set in the history of invention. It sounds much more likely to me that this is a business decision, right? Because if you can de-link yourself from Warner Brothers, and then you can expand your sport a little bit because of it, it's the obvious choice. Especially if it's mysteriously as popular as it is.
My only question is, are the rules of this one the same as the rules of Quidditch in the series? Because if it is, how can it be so popular?
Currently, I believe yes.
I don't really know. You know what I do know about this sport? I've watched a few videos of people playing it. One thing that I know about this sport that is absolutely incredible, truly, it makes it better than the version, even though they're not actually flying, is the fact that typically the snitch is a person dressed in a yellow skin-tight suit who sprints all over the place, not trying not to get caught. And that is hilarious to me.
So my only experience with this form of Quidditch is actually from a movie with Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, who have to go play it on the Google campuses. And they're very confused, obviously, because they're playing the outdated older generation who doesn't understand. But also, while doing a small amount of research, they may be changing the rules on the snitch, because a lot of snitches would just leave for half an hour, go grab food, and then join the audience in the stands and just eat it.
What?
Yep. There was apparently very little snitch play regulation, and people were taking it to the next level.
That's really interesting. Why would you regulate it, though? Who cares?
I mean, people gotta have some sort of time limit.
Sure, but like, 30 minutes isn't that bad.
Fair.
Okay, let's say that in the NFL there was a small chance that the game would end within the first 2 minutes. How pleased would that make everybody? Not very.
Might make some of the CTE people live a little longer.
It might, but I think perhaps they should put a rule into this that not only allows them to leave and go get food, they can't be touched for the first 30 minutes of the game.
What do the Seekers do for the first 30 minutes?
They sit. They do nothing. They do an interpretation of the scene where Harry almost falls off his broom. But they're on the ground, of course, so it's like a... And then they can get points from judges based on how well they represented the scene.
Nice. Well, if you want to play Quidditch 2, get in touch with Brady.
I don't mean to sound skeptical of Muggle Quidditch as a whole, but I am.
So. I'm pretty sure last week I called it trash. Like, I feel like I did that on the podcast, so it's interesting timing.
It's such a so very bizarre, I guess, is the best way for me to put it. But you know what? I don't have anything else to say about it. Baylor, what are your thoughts on this Quidditch debacle? Or this quad ball debacle, excuse me.
You know, I completely agree with you. You know, we've gone into it before. I think adding some kind of time limit. I know if I'm watching an NFL game, I'm real big into fantasy football. You know, if I'm watching an NFL game and it ended after 2 minutes, I'd probably be pretty pissed too, especially with the price of tickets and the price of beer and everything right now. So I think that there's got to be some kind of rule altering to make it more enjoyable for the fans. But I will say it is kind of hilarious that the snitch is a person, first of all, and also that they just leave randomly and then sit in the crowd. And then all the play, obviously probably the Seeker probably charges into the crowd, I'm guessing.
It's one of my all-time favorite things in sport, even though I don't like the sport in general, is that there's a human snitch who can just do whatever they want during the game. I think it's pretty funny.
I do wonder every year when the ESPN offices decide to write the Quidditch score, whether it'll say Quidditch this year or quad ball.
Surely it will still say Quidditch.
If it isn't, they've messed up, I think. Yeah,
surely. You have another piece of Harry Potter
news. I do. The second piece of news isn't news, it's a rumor.
So it is news.
Eh, depends who you ask. Jude Law will produce and star in a series between the events of Fantastic Beasts and Secrets of Dumbledore and Harry Potter. Which, the rumor is, and when I discussed this with you, you were head on, is that possibly the two final movies will be cut in favor of like an HBO show.
I think that makes perfect sense, to be honest. I think, given the ending we had from Secrets of Dumbledore, how they really kind of tied a nice, neat bow on top of the series and then flushed it down the toilet, it would make sense to have a nice breakaway from that and then tell the story of Dumbledore versus Grindelwald in its own standalone setting. I'm totally in favor of this, whether it's a rumor or not. If it is a rumor, I'm going to make it happen.
I mean, the nice thing, right, is if it is actually going to happen, like, TV shows seem to be produced much quicker, like probably looking at a timeline for next summer or next fall. So that's pretty exciting.
This is also, I really, if you think about it, this is the type of thing they could use to bridge between now and a much bigger project down the road as well.
I also don't want to be the type of podcast that doesn't reveal my sources. So I will give credit where credit is due to Jax Teller MC on Reddit, who referenced Daniel RPK, a pretty reliable scooper, and Ajep Arts, former Geeks Worldwide reliable scooper, who have confirmed and told everyone about this story.
That makes it sound like a rumor, what you just said.
To be fair, from what I understand, these two people did have some insight very early in Fantastic Beasts production.
So there is a bit of a track record at the very least.
It's a small rumor.
It's also, to be honest, it's a rumor that makes perfect sense. Right? Like, if they need time to rewrite so that they can make it into a TV show, they've already set the stage for themselves because they've said, we're going to take a break after The Secrets of Dumbledore anyways. And so the break could be rewrite and turn into a TV show time, which, again, I'm total support of.
One bad piece of news. Johnny Depp will not be returning.
To the Fantastic Beasts series?
Yes.
Sure.
I mean,
the dude just got $300 million to be in Pirates again. So.
I saw that. I loved Johnny Depp's Grindelwald. I will even admit that Mads is better.
I think he's more befitting the role. And
yeah.
I think it would probably be beneath Johnny Depp to return anyways, given the treatment. Unless they gave him $300 million. Then
like Disney?
Treatment be damned. Regardless. So there's some Harry Potter news for you guys. I know we haven't had any for a couple weeks. Quidditch is now quad ball, which is a weird, it's a change that's not necessary, frankly, in my opinion. And we might have a new TV show coming out sometime in the next, I would guess, 3 to 4 years. And so that's exciting as well. Hopefully we'll get more news on content to expect maybe a little bit sooner than that. But only time will tell. More importantly, we have an interview to get to.
We do.
Again, today we're discussing a different fan fiction. We're taking a break from Alex Quick to discuss a fan fiction called Bagsy Beetlehorn and the Thorned Gauntlet. We all read the fan fiction. We all read the story. And then we interviewed the author. And we're going to play that interview for you right now. All right, as promised, we are here with the author of a different fan fiction, Bagsy Beetlehorn and the Thorned Gauntlet, and we're here with to discuss this, to talk about the story with, of course, the three of us, and then also Leo. Leo, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
We are fortunate enough to know about you because you're one of the few people that have actually reached out to us on Reddit. And you actually brought this story to our attention, which we're pretty grateful for.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I'm really grateful to just be on the podcast at all, to be honest.
When we got into season two of the podcast, we discussed as a group what to do. And one thing we wanted to do was interview the authors of other fan fictions, because as you know, we spend a lot of time talking about Alexander Quick. In fact, that's basically our primary discussion. And so we thought if we could get other fan fiction authors on board, we could get them a little bit of exposure and then also maybe attract some audiences of our own at the same time. And so you're our first one for this new season, I think. You're our first author that we're interviewing. So we hope it's going to go smooth, as long as you answer questions and don't say anything too terribly offensive, you know? You'll be just as good as Delbert always is. With that being said, I suppose it's pretty late for you, so we should hop right in. And I'm just going to have, Delbert, since you wrote the questions, I'm just going to have you start and we'll go from there.
Sure, sure. So we just wanted to start off with getting to know your Harry Potter background, because obviously that's what brings everyone to these fan fictions, is a love of Harry Potter. So I know you answered these in Reddit to me personally, but I wanted to share with the podcast, what is your Harry Potter house? What is your favorite Harry Potter movie or book? And what's your least favorite thing in Harry Potter and why?
So I'm definitely a Hufflepuff. I don't consider myself particularly brave, smart, or ambitious, which aren't necessarily bad things, but I do work obsessively hard. So, well, at least I think I do. I like to think I do. So I put myself in Hufflepuff. As for my favorite movie and book, book's going to have to be Prisoner of Azkaban. I think the length feels just right. It's not too long, it's not too short. The pace is really good. The mystery and the hook is super engaging. It's like there's a killer on the loose. And the time travel ending is just really fun. It feels kind of out of left field, but like in a good way. Like it catches you by surprise. And then it all kind of ties up neatly at the end. My favorite movie is Half-Blood Prince, purely because of that one scene in the hut where Professor Slughorn is talking about the, what do you call the spherical glass thing? The bowl. Why did I forget what a bowl was called? He's talking about the glass bowl that Lily made for him. And the way he like tells it is really emotional, and how it's empty on the day that Lily died. Spoilers. I mean, whatever. I just like that part a lot in the movie. My least favorite thing is at the end of the series, I feel like there's a real lack of systemic change in the universe when throughout the series, the whole time I was thinking, oh, magical creatures are being really mistreated. There's lots of really yikes things about the ministry. I can't wait to see how these are resolved. And then they're just not. So that's probably my least favorite thing.
What an incredible answer on the last question particularly, because my short answer to that is always just cursed child.
I've stayed as far away from that as I can.
Well, I really like the insight about, you're right, like magical creatures, things don't get really that much better. House elves are still treated miss poorly, and there's still clearly a blood bias going forward. I mean, completely spot on there.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I really just expected to even hear about some changes within Hogwarts, like even just getting rid of sorting entirely, because it obviously doesn't actually work. And then we get to the epilogue of the seventh book, and we find out that sorting is still the same. There's still an anti-Slytherin bias going on. So you're right that they take down the most powerful dark wizard in the history of the world and then say, well, we don't need to change anything.
Job well done.
So now that we know a little bit about your interest in Harry Potter, we kind of just want to start off by talking about how you got into writing fan fiction, or really how you got into fan fiction in general. I think for me especially, but I think for most people, you get into fan fiction because it feels like you're missing something that you don't know yet from the universe. And so how did you get into fan fiction?
Well, that thing you said at the end will definitely come into play with my answer. But to be honest with you, Bagsy is the only fan fiction I've ever written. Not to say that I haven't been writing. I've been writing since I was really young, like around year six, which in the UK, that's like 10 years old. It's how I passed my time. It was my main hobby. I wrote obsessively. All of my writing until Bagsy was entirely original, no fan fiction inside. It was all like my own weird little universes. And I wrote all throughout secondary school, which is 11 to 18 years old. And I created multiple books in multiple series in multiple universes. I just did it like all the time. I'm very, very severely dyslexic. So it wasn't actually until university that I was able to read Harry Potter, because I've just found it too challenging. And then when I read it, and I got to the end, I felt exactly what you just said. I felt that there was a bit missing. I felt like there was something I didn't see tackled in the books, which were the cultural issues I mentioned earlier. I didn't see those being resolved. I didn't see the change that I was expecting to happen at the end. And I also felt there was some miss potential with the traits of different house characters being explored in their strengths and weaknesses. So I just figured I'd, do a little something of my own in the universe.
I think that's really cool. And I actually think it's really interesting that you've been writing for so long. I have, actually, the three of us have a mutual friend who's been writing for quite some time as well. I think that maybe the primary difference between the two of you is that he doesn't see the value in fan fiction whatsoever. In fact, if we were to ask him to read something like Bagsy Beetlehorn or the Alexander Quick series or even something shorter than that, he would probably respond to us with, well, if you're going to write a whole fan fiction story, why don't you just write something original instead? So this wasn't even on the list of questions, but I'm going to ask you how you would respond to that if he was to say that to you.
Well, I write for one reason and one reason alone. It's really fun. So if my passion and my enjoyment is pointing me towards someone else's universe and to write in that universe, then I better do that because that's how I'm going to have fun. I don't do it to make money. I mean, obviously, I can't make money off of Bagsy because it's set in someone else's universe, so just have fun with it.
That's awesome. I think that's a great answer.
Good answer.
Yeah, me too. I especially liked going back to like your answer to the how you got into writing fan fiction. I really liked how you pointed how there was some mispotential with the different houses that were there, and especially this book. I mean, you know, the focus isn't Gryffindor really at all, other than they're kind of pretentious jerks. It seems like, and which I enjoy. I've liked that you kind of expanded, you know, Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, because for a long time, you know, kind of the running meme of the Harry Potter series was that Hufflepuff was pretty useless as a house.
I really like that you bring that up, because I guess this is a very minor spoiler for the first Bagsy book, but whatever. Bagsy is a Hufflepuff, and pretty much the whole series is a love letter, not just to Hufflepuff, but in main to Hufflepuff, of the coolness of Hufflepuff. Like, it really looks at being hardworking and dedicated as kind of like a superpower, which I think was really undervalued in the main series. If they're hardworking, that means they're going to be putting a lot of time and effort into things, which will really pay off in some quite whimsical ways when you're in a magical world.
Yeah, I think you did actually a really good job of writing from that perspective. When you consider the struggles that Bagsy goes through in this story, the struggles that she has with some of her classes and things, and the solutions she has to come up with on the back end. And then even Delbert and I were discussing just how cool it is that while she struggles in some of the more traditional areas, the more mechanical things, that the classes where you get your hands dirty, where you don't necessarily have to be an Albus Dumbledore level wizard to have success. She crushes those because she's willing to get her hands dirty and because she's willing to work hard and practice and repeat things over and over.
Oh yeah, absolutely. She spends all her time studying when she can because she is so determined to do well at things that she can do well at, and it really, really pays off. And that's just being, that's her way of being a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, like you said, we're going to try to avoid most spoilers, I think, because obviously a lot of the viewers aren't going to, or listeners aren't going to have heard or read this story yet. But I do want to spoil part of a paragraph that you put only in chapter 3, I believe. So it's a little bit early on, but there is a paragraph that talks about Bagsy and her sister, and it goes, "Bonte was gifted. She told Bagsy that as a child she could double the size of cake slices Himble and Florentia gave her, or make the clock hands move to sneak an extra hour of play before bed. Taking inspiration, Bagsy had done the same in her childhood, only she had just cut herself an extra large slice of cake when her parents weren't looking, or constructed an extendable wooden stick to push the clock hands around." And when I read this paragraph, I reached out to Brady and I said, this is brilliant. I really love how this character, even in a world of magic, just thinks outside the box.
I don't have words. I'm hearing someone else talk about your work like that feels so good. But I actually loved that paragraph, and I rewrote it quite a few different times because it started out quite clunky, in my opinion. And I thought, I actually really seriously considered just taking it out. I'm now very, very glad I didn't.
No, when I started reading this book, I was like kind of 50-50 on it because I was in the middle of reading through all of Alex Quick again, which was, that's a lot of reading. And then I put this to the side and I was like reading through that paragraph and I just like stopped and I was like, that is an incredible paragraph. And it really hooked me into the rest of the story.
It's such a unique subversion of expectations, I think, when you're talking about the wizarding world of Harry Potter, where you've got like the typical prototypical story is the story of Harry Potter, right? Where he's the extraordinary kid in an ordinary world, and that's what makes him special. And this kind of subverts that, where Bagsy really at the start isn't extraordinary, but she makes herself so through quote unquote normal means. And so she does things that would make her sister or a normal wizard probably scoff a little bit, but it works so well because you're expecting her to have magical prowess right away. And then she does these other things to get by and be proficient. It's just a really cool take on the wizarding world.
Yeah. And that was 100%. I mean, the main passion that started me down the path of writing Bagsy was the idea of what we had a story like Harry Potter, but the main character was just terrible at magic in like pretty much all the major ways you can be terrible at magic. They're an ordinary, you said Harry Potter's an extraordinary child in this ordinary world, and Bagsy is an ordinary child in an extraordinary world, but then she can show the ways that she's extraordinary in other avenues.
That's great. We were all kind of wondering this. As far as fan fiction goes, as I think, at least Delbert and I think, that you're the only author we know of who has written out an entire storyline and then began to post it from book one, rather than finishing a book, posting it, working on another one, and posting it. And so we were just wondering why you chose to go that route instead of a more typical route for a fan fiction author.
I think that's a very fair question, because all seven Bagsy books, which have all been drafted in full, I think they come to 1.25 million words in total. And the reason why I wrote all of that before releasing a single chapter was because I really wanted to have good consistency in the story. I love to foreshadow. I love everything to line up as perfectly as possible, be as coherent as possible. And for me, the best way to do that is to have all seven books at least roughly drafted before I release the first one. Because then when I go back to the first one and I edit it, I know a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't know when I was first writing it. And rereading book one now, because I know stuff in book seven that no one reading book one has an idea about. And when I was rereading book one to release the chapters, because I was editing it, some of the lines I was picking up, I have a good giggle to myself because I can see foreshadowing in them that you would have no clue about until you've read all seven books.
I think that's awesome.
That's a really smart... Yeah, I think it's a really smart way to go about it. You know, one of the things JKR is really good at is putting little hints and hooks in the early books that then when they come back around, the reader goes, wait a second, I read about that when Harry was in his first year at Hogwarts or his second year at Hogwarts. And it's really gratifying as a reader. So as an author, the fact that you're purposefully making sure that that happens, that's... a really cool way to go about it, I think.
Thanks. I should probably also add in some context to my writing pace, because I have a very quick writing pace. In fact, In the last six weeks, I've written two books, and I think they're about 80 to 90k each. I'm not going to speak to their quality, because obviously I wrote them very, very quickly, but I can write easily 10k a day. And if I'm really focusing, 20K a day. So getting through the seven Bagsy books only took me, I think, about 3 years, including quite a bit of editing, which isn't feasible for other writers if they focus more on like slow pace and quality, whereas I just wanted to get them all written first.
So what would you say allows your writing pace to be so fast? Is it do the ideas just flow really easily for you, or have you sketched things out ahead of time, or how does that work?
I do a bit of rough sketching. I would describe it as, I'm not sure if everyone gets this, but I think some people when they were kids, they'd get their toys out, you know, like when you're a little kid and you play little imagined scenarios with your toys and they'd have like epic battles or whatever. I did that as a kid. And then suddenly my brain just didn't work that way anymore. And I couldn't, like the toys didn't feel real to me. And so writing became that. So when I write, it's just like getting toys out of a toy box and playing with them. It's really, really fun. So I love doing it. I do it all the time. And I just write. I don't know. It just kind of happens.
Yeah. And it's interesting because obviously, like we said already, we focus a lot on the Alex Quick series because that's how we started our podcast. And we've seen post after post after post, and it's no shame to Inverarity because I think his work in Alex Quick is fantastic, but where he, who did not write all the books in advance, is struggling sometimes to figure out what to include, what not to include, revisiting back and having to rewrite parts of his stuff because he didn't take that, you know, million and a quarter words and write all of it before putting it out. So it's interesting to see it work both ways.
I think another really good example of that is what we're seeing with the Fantastic Beasts series. And, you know, it's a movie, so it's a little different. But, I mean, they're making those up as they go along. And you kind of see how derailed that became. And so I think the way that you're doing it is an incredibly smart way to do it. I mean, you're going to be able to, you know, tie these ideas in that you had in the first book, in the last book, like you're saying, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah, like the first chapter of book one was the last chapter I ever wrote.
That's cool. I like that. I think that's really neat. A bit of a different question here, maybe not quite as in-depth, but I think Delbert especially wants to know, will Professor Binns ever retire? Because here we are reading, we've read, of course, a lot of fan fiction, but here we are reading Bagsy. And he's still there.
Yeah.
He seems to be the one constant.
It's a cast of all original characters, for those that haven't read it. You won't see any other names that you recognize besides old Professor Bin still teaching wizard history or history of magic.
Yeah, he's never retiring.
He's basically free labor at this point. Forever.
Yeah, I wonder if he keeps getting pay raises and eventually will become the richest person alive. Or not alive, in this case.
Maybe he's the real big boss at the end. Is he becomes like the Jeff Bezos of the magic world.
That would be pretty funny.
Yeah. Perhaps a new fanfic.
So speaking of Professor Binns, kind of this isn't a question about him, but you have all these original characters, and I'm not going to lie to you, the names of all these characters were extraordinary. Like they were not simple names, I would say, is a good way to put it. So I guess what was your process in picking these names that you used for all the characters?
It really depends on the character. For the characters that I want to have very strange sounding names so that they're like nothing like the ones that we're familiar with, so that would be like Bagsilia, Mesrielda, Florentia, Himble, those sorts of names, Rabontil. I start with sounds that I think strike me as things that I haven't heard in names before, and then I just kind of play around with them for a very long time, putting them in different orders to see what I like. I think, for instance, with Mesrielda, I think subconsciously there was a bit of Esmeralda in there. And then I just kind of moved the M, and then I had Mesrielda. And then once I like how it sounds, I stick with it. With other names, it's a bit more simple. I just do a, you know, go to a baby name site, look for a name that has a specific meaning that fits the character and that also looks like an interesting name. And then I just chuck that in there.
I like that approach because you, like, the names are very memorable. You know, like I just read this today, the entire book today, and I honestly probably remember, you know, 95% of the characters, whereas, you know, Harry Potter, they're kind of more the normal names, the more popular names, whatever, and I forgot a lot of the side characters, but especially Bagsy, I mean, that's a very catchy name for the title of a book series.
Yeah, I mean, my the only name, it's not really a name regret that I have, but Todd, I didn't realize until I finished the seventh book, this is my dyslexia coming into play again, that it's typically spelt with two D's. But by that point, I kind of grew attached to it just having the one D. So it's Todd is technically spelled incorrectly. But oh well, I think that adds to the charm. But I like the name Bagsy. Fun fact about Bagsy, I also didn't realize until after finishing all seven books that Bagsy is the same as the if you Bagsy something. Because I thought...
What?
I'm not sure if this is an American phrase. Maybe it's just an English thing. But if you like say, I Bagsy that, it means like, that's mine now, I've called dibs.
I've never heard that. I'm going to start using it. Yeah. That's good. I like it.
Well, the thing is, you've never heard of that, but you're, I'm assuming, American or grown up in America. So you have an excuse. I don't. I grew up in the UK, and one of my friends turned to me and went, why did you call the main character Bagsy? Like, what's she Bagsying? And I was like, do you mean Pagsy? And they were like, no, I don't. I mean Bagsy. And then I did a quick Google search, and then I cringed because this whole time I didn't realize. Anyway.
Well, it reads well to your American audience, I'll say that.
It does, and I just wanted to throw out there that when I'm reading a fantasy novel, to be honest, I'm expecting to see names that don't typically line up with a normal common name I might hear in my everyday life. And so the fact that you've included so many of those types of names, really, I think we could have done with more of that in the mainline series. Because if we're already saying that magic is real and that there's dragons and all this other kind of crazy stuff can happen, we should have some crazy names. Like some of the most famous wizards or magicians of lore are named like Merlin and things like that. So I think the naming conventions that you used are really pretty cool, actually. And I was glad you brought up using baby name websites, because when I'm doing stuff for Dungeons & Dragons, it's the exact same thing that I do. I just go to baby naming websites and look for names.
I feel like baby name websites rely more on writers and Dungeons & Dragons players than they do new parents.
Oh, of course. I agree 100%.
So, before we took you up on this interview, I did a deep dive on your Reddit account. Looked through your past and looked through everything up to date. First off, Irelia is a horrible champion in League of Legends. But secondly, on your release schedule, the last I saw is you planned on releasing 4 books through this year, and then the final 3 will be out sometime next year. Is that still what you have planned?
I am actually delaying book 4 by a little bit, simply because 1, 2, and 3 came out in very quick succession, because I'm very impatient. But I feel like book 4 is quite a turning point for the series in terms of its tone and the plot story, and things start getting a lot more complicated, kind of like the book 4 in the original series. So I want to give some time for people to theorize and think about the first 3 books before I release book 4, because book 4 has a couple of plot twists and a couple of theories are either going to be confirmed or denied by it. So I kind of don't want to quash those theories just yet. So I just want to give some time. So it's going to be released in the first half of next year. And then the following 3 books, I'll probably have book 5 towards the end of next year. And then book 6 the year after. And then maybe book 7 the year after that. So I've kind of slowed it out a bit. But I will probably just, you know, play it a bit by ear and see when is the best time to release them.
Awesome. I mean, still excited to have the 2nd and 3rd already ready. I'm sure I'll burn through those at some point soon, but if the first book is any indicator, I'm excited for the whole series.
Yeah, I'm excited as well, and I kind of think spacing it out is a good idea, personally. Not that I'm a prolific writer like yourself, but it does give you a little bit more time to, if you wanted to make changes or whatever else, you have that ability, and Kind of on the topic of that, aside from Bagsy, are you working on any other projects similar to this, or is most of your current day writing more geared towards just personal stories that you're working on yourself?
So I'm actually currently working on an original set of books to be published. Because I've spent my whole life writing, and I do it obsessively, I really, really want to get some of my own stuff officially published, either through a literary agent or self-publishing. So I'm actually currently working on those, and that's the two books that I've been writing in the past 6 weeks. I've got another three that I want to write in the series before I start sending off to literary agents. And my current goal is to have those next three books done within the next 2 months. I'm very excited for this series. It's also kind of a similar tone and age range as Bagsy. Do you want to hear a bit about it?
Sure.
Yeah, we'd love we'd certainly love to have you talk about it a little bit if you want to.
Nice. Okay, well, it's set in a world where it's nothing but ice. It's an ice apocalypse. Except for this one settlement, this haven from the cold called Tundra. And it follows a young boy who grows up in Tundra as he tries to find a way to be useful to the settlement that, in his mind, he's only ever been a drain on. He views himself as a waste of space and resources in this very harsh environment. And it's his journey in this place as he uncovers mysteries and faces monsters and learns how to go into frost caves or survive out on the ice or stuff like that.
So would you describe it as being like sort of a coming of age style of story?
I'd call it, I guess, coming of age, but I think it's more self-acceptance and self-worth, which I guess is coming of age in a way.
Sure. I'm just a sucker for coming of age stories, and it kind of was ringing that bell a little bit in my head, but it sounds interesting. And, you know, I think the undertaking of writing even a single book is monumental. And so the fact that you've written this series and then you're also writing an original series as well, is a really a pretty admirable thing to be doing, to be spending your time doing.
Thank you.
So I've got a question that definitely wasn't prepared. and it spoils a tiny, tiny bit of book one, but we approached this in a episode of our podcast over our mid-season break with a, fan-made film called The Sisters of House Black. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with it. It's on the watch list.
Yeah, it's awesome. I would definitely check it out. But that one was promoted and made and acted in primarily by LGBTQ actors and writers and everything like that, which is really nice to see from our perspective because of the JKR comments that came out, 2 years ago now? And in your book, there's a character, we won't spoil much more, but the name is Fitzsimmons, who does not seem to identify with either gender and prefers just to be known as Professor. Was that something that you intentionally wanted to include as, like, to promote that idea, or did it just fit with your story?
I mean, I'll throw in an extra motivation here for writing Bagsy, was I was frustrated with the lack of representation on many different accounts, not just the LGBT community, in J.K. Rowling's original works. And part of Bagsy is retelling stories in that world, because it is similar to Harry Potter in some ways, with that representation. And Professor Fitzsimmons, I will just confirm now, is non-binary, which is why they use they-them pronouns. They're not a man or a woman, they're non-binary. And they're not the only LGBT character in the story. I'm not going to say what other characters are LGBT. Some naturally become visibly LGBT throughout the course of the stories. Others are just ones that I know are LGBT, but it's not really relevant to the story. And all of my books follow this trend because why not have representation in your stories?
Yeah, no, I agree. I like to see it. I mean, it's the same thing as going outside. If I go to work, there's a guy that's gay at my work. Like, I see him every day, so why not see someone that represents that in every story I read? So, I like it being there. I think it's cool. And I'm glad that the people that are building off of what JKR built are including that representation.
I'll happily throw in there as well, I am myself LGBT, So it's very, like, I also have a personal motivation here.
That makes sense, yeah.
I think it's the way you're going about including it in your story also is a much more effective way to have representation, to include it organically, put it in right away, and then it's just there. It's part of the story. Is so much better than going back and retconning years in the future and saying, oh yeah, by the way, this character was part of the LGBT community, because then that, in my opinion, it makes it something less than what it would be if you just start right away with the inclusion of those characters. And so I, when I picked up on the fact that Fitzsimmons was using they, them pronouns, I was pleased at how normal it read. It's just normal in the book because it should be normal in real life, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, in this version of the magical world, they're just transphobia and homophobia pretty much don't exist. You might find the odd, I think there's one line, I think it's Florentia who says something that is slightly bigoted. And there's also other characters who say things which are slightly sexist. But on the whole, the world is very different in terms of its views than the world we're used to in the modern day.
Well, I applaud you, and Delbert brought up the Sisters of House Black movie. I applaud them. I applaud everybody who has those beliefs, who are LGBTQ. I applaud them for continuing, you know, to keep their faith in the series regardless of JKR's, you know, comments. And I really appreciate that you guys are taking it upon yourselves to rewrite the book in the way it should have been. You know, maybe not rewrite the book, but put the universe the way it should be, which is inclusive for everybody.
I only have one question left. I don't know about the other guys, but it's really simple. Quidditch rules suck, don't they?
They're terrible, my word.
They're so bad. Alex Quick points it out too in that series. I mean, they are horrific. It's bad. I just wanted to verify that you agreed, even though you kind of wrote that into your series so far. So,
I do agree. I will have to confess that Quidditch does become a bit more of a subplot in the later books. However, I think it's a fresh take on it, because the Hufflepuff team are terrible. They're terrible. They're really not good at Quidditch.
With that question out of the way, I suppose we have a little bit more time here. So I'm just going to give you the platform. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Anything else you'd like to share about Bagsy Beetlehorn, or anything else fan fiction related you'd like to talk about? Anything like that?
Well, there was one of the questions you sent me, I think, is quite interesting, which I'm not sure we got to, which is, where did the idea for Bagsy come from? Which I really want to actually talk about, because it's quite, I think it's interesting.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
So originally, Bagsy Beetlehorn wasn't going to be a 7-book series. That actually very much came out of the left field. I finished Harry Potter, and I thought, I kind of want a bit more of this, and I want a bit more, you know, representation, and I want, well, whatever. So I thought, all right, let's write, like, in between the book I've just finished writing and the next one, as like a palate cleanser, let's do, like, I don't know, 40,000 words in a one shot. And it was going to be about two professors, Professor Bagsy Beetlehorn and Professor Mesrielda Glint, and their kind of life of professors at Hogwarts. And it would have a couple flashbacks to when they were students at Hogwarts. And it was a very different idea to what Bagsy ended up being. And I remember I wrote, I think, 5 chapters in it, when I just kind of thought, I'm more interested in them as students than I am with them as professors. And then I thought, I'm not seriously going to write 7 books about Bagsy, because that's a lot of books and I'm in full-time study and I'm very busy. And then 3 years went by and I did it, and whatever. It was a massive fever dream. So that's how Bagsy came to be. It was originally just going to be a very short one shot, and then that got entirely scrapped.
Wow. I think that it's the idea that this developed out of Bagsy having already been an adult, that's really, really interesting, actually. So is that foreshadowing to what happens to her 7 books down the road?
Yeah, is she just destined to be a teacher? No!
I'm not. She could end up as a professor. She could not end up as a professor. I'm not going to give anything of that away. I'll just say that all the ideas from that original one-shot are gone. Story's completely different. The only thing that remained, which I really, really liked, was the idea of the main character being just this massive, shy coward who really sucks at magic but works really, really hard and is really sweet. And that really stuck with me. So that carried on, but everything else is, you know, could be the same, could be changed. Who knows?
Gotcha. So what gave you the idea to make Bagsy kind of like a tinkerer, like able to, you know, experiment and have these little inventions that are magical?
I think I was really inspired by Tony Stark, in all honesty. I liked the idea of a character who, because if you think about Tony Stark as a character, he's just some guy. I mean, yeah, he's got a lot of money, and that is kind of his superpower. But he's also very, very smart, and he's really good at making inventions to the point where he gets to the same level as superhumans and gods. And that's really cool to me, the idea that it's just some dude, but he worked really hard at making an invention, and now he can go and punch aliens.
Yeah. I would say that you're probably not alone in being inspired by the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the things going on there. And I think you translated it from a billionaire playboy
philanthropist,
jeez, who's able to do this through hard work, become on the same level as the other superheroes, to an 11-year-old awkward, clunky girl very, very well. Because, and the reason I'm saying that is when I read Bagsy, never once did my mind go, oh, she's based on Tony Stark, until you just mentioned that, and now I see the connection there.
I mean, yeah, I am still obsessed with Tony Stark, such a cool character. And I just figured I wanted to have a slightly different take on it. And one thing I personally really enjoy about Bagsy's character is that she's not written with the intention of her shyness being a flaw or her cowardice being a flaw. Because I'm sure plenty of stories exist like this, but I haven't yet encountered a story where a character is shy and cowardly and their character arc isn't about getting over that. Because, you know, being shy isn't a character flaw. I guess sticking up for your friends when they're in trouble, yeah, that's a nice thing to do. But being shy is different from that.
Absolutely. I was actually just going to say that because I'm an introvert myself, and I resonated a lot with how Bagsy felt, you know, about going to Hogwarts the first time and meeting all these new people and everything. So I think it's really cool that she never really got over that. Yes, there was a little bit of character growth. You know, at first she didn't want to go to Hogwarts, and then that's kind of a spoiler. I shouldn't probably say that. You know, she grows as a character going forward, which I enjoyed. But you kept that shyness in there, which I really enjoyed. And
I was going to say that's probably part of the reason that she resonates well with the entirety of the cast of our podcast, is that you're speaking to a group of introverts here anyways, who have all had these same feelings as Bagsy. And so it's easy to relate to what she's feeling. And I'm going to echo what Baylor said and just say that the fact that you were able to show her growing as a person while also maintaining these key characteristics of her is really impressive writing, I think. And on top of that, it's realistic, right? I'm 28 years old, and my entire life I've been pretty introverted and shy, and I'm still that way. But that doesn't mean that I haven't become, you know, an adequate human being as well. So I think you did really well there.
Thanks. Oh, I think there was one other... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, thanks. I think there was one other question, which was me not using any canon characters. And the reason is actually very, very simple. I'm not confident in writing other people's characters. I have no confidence in doing that. So I figured if I write all my own characters, I will know and understand them. And so I don't have to worry about misrepresenting them.
That makes sense. And it also makes sense why Ben's there, because no one's ever actually written anything that characterizes Ben's.
Exactly. He just shows up and he yawns and he teaches. Done. Easy.
Yeah. And students have been sleeping in his class for generations.
And they will for generations to come.
Indeed.
I guess so.
Yeah.
With that being said, that's all the questions we have. And I just wanted to say thanks to you for coming on the podcast. You're the second ever interview we did. We interviewed the person who narrated the audiobook for Alexander Quick. As well. And I have to say, I'm just going to go on record and say that I think we should just be an interview podcast because I so thoroughly enjoy these. This interview has been one of the highlights of my week, actually. It's just been such an interesting way to get to know this story.
I agree. The first interview, too, with Sam, I know all of us went in kind of not knowing what to expect with it, but that was also a great episode. It was a great time, so I'm all on board, and I mean, it's awesome to meet new people and get around to new fan fictions or different fan fictions than what we typically focus on, and hopefully we can kind of pull the fan fiction community, like, together and let them, you know, find out new stuff and be able to talk about different fanfics.
I mean, I'd certainly want to listen to that, and I've had a great time as well being on here. Thank you so much. This has also been the highlight of my week.
Well, I'll speak for the group and say that you're welcome back on anytime. And I think maybe after we read the next couple of books, we might try to get you on for one of our between season episodes where we can spend a touch more time talking to each other. But regardless, I just want to say thanks again for taking the time to stay up much later than it is for us right now to talk to us, because this truly has been an excellent interview, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much. It's been great.
Yeah. And good luck on your your novel, on your series. Hopefully it is picked up by a publisher, and I wish you all the luck in that as well.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. And one last thing, I would love to extend the invitation, if you get your book published or when you get your book published, to let us know. We'll talk about it.
We absolutely will.
Yeah, no doubt. Might not be fan fiction at that point, but I'm willing to stretch the bounds of our podcast.
That's amazing. I'd love that.
All right, well, I think we're going to wrap the interview up here. Thanks again for coming on, and I suppose it's time for us to let you get to bed, looking at the clock.
Thanks, yeah, I'm gonna go crash, because I got to get up at 5:30, which is in 5 hours.
Ooh. Oh no, we're right. Done.
We are going to end the interview there. Thanks one more time.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
A big thanks once again to Leo, the author of Bagsy Beetlehorn, for jumping on with us, working around the fact that our schedules weren't very flexible, staying up until, what was it?
Nearly one
in the morning UK time to be on with us and giving us that interview. And I just want to throw out there again, I think my two favorite episodes of this podcast have been the interview episodes.
They have been a blast to record and have exceeded expectations, to use Harry Potter lingo.
They're very refreshing, I think. And maybe that's part of the reason I like them so much. They definitely break up the read chapters, talk about chapters thing that we have going on with this podcast. And so they're fun episodes to record.
I agree. I will say my top three episodes are both of the interviews and that series of Alex Quick, the four chapters where everything just went crazy in book two. I think it was last week or the week before.
Just a couple weeks ago or something. Yeah, that's a great episode. That was a wild episode. What'd you guys think overall, now that we're offline with Leo, what do you guys think of this book?
It's good.
I enjoyed it. I read it pretty quickly, so I'm sure I missed some things. But I enjoyed it, and to be honest, I'm excited to see what happens in the next book. I'm excited to read this, and
I think it's a very strong first entry into a series. It was his first time, I believe, diving into a fan fiction type of setting, and I think that's reflected a little bit in some of the writing. But the story overall is good, and the characters are great. I think the diversity in characters, both diversity in who they are and then just also in their personalities and the way they act, is really, really well done. And so I think it's absolutely worth a read. And it's not a fan fiction that's unfinished either. It's a fan fiction that is completely finished, and you can expect 7 parts to come out. So if you check out the first one and really like it, there's more for you. Books 2 and 3 are also out, and then the remainder of the series is on the way. So in my opinion, it's really, really worth checking out.
I agree.
I think my favorite part about that is the fact that because he wrote them all at the, you know, got them done before he posted anything, kind of like he was saying, he's able to make changes or improve the story going forward. But he also is tying, kind of pulling a JKR, you know, he's tying these subtle foreshadowings from the earlier books that, you know, he said will be revealed in the later books, which is one of my favorite parts about Harry Potter, is when people do that. So I think the way that they're going about this is a great idea. And I think that's what makes me most excited to read further, is just the thought put into that.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I agree with both of you, Brady. I think it's a really good introduction to the series. I mean, like you said, and like he said in the interview, he read Harry Potter in college or in university, and then immediately wrote a fan fiction afterwards. So I think there's some stuff that you and me might have done differently since we've been invested in this series for 16 years. But overall, the story was solid. The characters were good. I will read more, and I think that's the point of a first book.
Well, I think absolutely. If you're going to write a series, your first book is the hook. And overall, this is a pretty good hook. So I just wanted to ask you guys a couple of questions that don't have a lot of context for the audience, but hoping that might entice them to check things out a little bit. Beginning with, who's your favorite character in this book? And a non-spoiler reason why.
Bagsy, because she brings a light to Hufflepuff not seen since Cedric Diggory.
Okay, nice.
Wow.
Baylor, what were you going to say?
I was also going to say Bagsy because she's very shy and introverted like I was. And I think her character development made the story.
I was going to say Professor Fitzsimmons, because they are the mentor that Alex Quick so desperately needs.
Oh, yes, they are.
My second no context for the audience question that I was going to ask you guys is, what happened in this book that surprised you the most? And maybe that we can attach a minor spoiler tag to this answer, but there's a few things that go on in this book that I just frankly wasn't expecting when they happened. And so I was wondering if you guys had a moment that stood out like that to you.
For me, I think it was, I don't know if it was an addition to Harry Potter canon or if they exist somewhere in the subtle universe, but the revealing of what a silver tongue is and what they do and seemingly how powerful they are. I thought that was a really cool way to separate, you know, the normal Hogwarts business from the normal series and this series.
I have a great answer for this, but it is a dangerous spoiler. So I'm going to stay away from that. Go with my first thought, which was her family life. Like, you get into this thing, and, like, we've seen different family lives with Alex and with Harry, but we've never seen something like this where there is a sister, there are parents, they are biological, it seems, and they do not seem to care very much for each other at the beginning of this book.
It's interesting that you're right. This is like a nuclear family finally heading one of these stories. And they're just as dysfunctional as the other families we've experienced in the wizarding world.
Yep.
And just a caveat there, they don't like abuse Bagsy like Harry is by the Dursleys. They just they're tied up in their work, so they don't really spend much time with the kids.
It's like cold indifference almost.
Yeah.
Like it's a different type of neglect.
It reminds me kind of, and this is like a very deep like transition here. The parents remind me of Walter Wyatt, where everything he's doing throughout Breaking Bad is to provide for his family. But while he's doing that, he also ruins his family.
Right. It's that to a degree. Not quite so severely. At least not yet. Not
to the meth kingpin type of style, but yeah.
I was just going to throw out that the plant that Bagsy grows about two-thirds of the way into the story is freaking cool.
Yeah,
it's so cool. I didn't have any idea what to expect to come from the process leading up to that reveal. And the fact that it has uses depending on certain circumstances, and that it's a really good example of the type of student Bagsy is, that she's able to grow it to full maturity, and then the use that it provides is a really, really cool way to describe a plant being useful.
Without spoiling, I find that plant hilarious, that there's a point where it's super useful, but that's not the better way of growing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool, and there's a lot of stuff like that going on in this book. A lot of unique, fresh ideas for the wizarding world, I think. And not things that are like obvious riffs on what JKR was doing, not things that are cheesy to the point of rolling your eyes at them, but legitimately good ideas that sound like they could be part of the wizarding world.
I think that was one of my favorite things with this book is, you know, we didn't have a repeat of all the Harry Potter lore that we hear about in the normal series, like, you know, all the Hogwarts ghosts and all the pictures and Diagon Alley and, you know, all the introduction. Like, it's already happened, and that's great, but we didn't see that repeat in the story. We just got right into the meat of the story, and it was kind of like we were jumping in to the same story as Harry Potter, but I'm assuming, you know, in 2020 or whenever he wrote these. And so I really enjoyed that feel of it.
I mean, in all, how many name drops are there? These aren't really spoilers, but there's the Fat Friar, who exists, but I don't think anything's really written about him. There's Ollivander's and Ollivander, the stop shop and the person, but once again, brief and nothing we didn't already know.
Yeah.
There's Binns and the Leaky Cauldron.
This story is very similar to AQ in that while there might be a name drop, the story does not rely on that name drop at all.
No.
Right? It's just something that's mentioned in passing, and then we focus on the story at hand rather than relying on canon ideas and canon characters as a crutch. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree. I
completely agree.
Do you guys have any last thoughts?
I have two very big spoiler-esque things I want to discuss.
All right, so we'll stamp an official spoiler tag starting right now. So if you're planning to read this, I would stop here, or if you don't care about spoilers, continue on.
Perfect. In the first and last chapter of the book, there's an ancient woman talking to a man on his deathbed. Is the ancient woman Bagsy? And did the thorned gauntlet thing that Mesrielda wish for of Bagsy staying alive just mean that she's immortal?
Oh, that's very interesting. An impossible question to answer, I guess, with what we know. I guess it's a possibility for sure. To give context, at the end of the story, they find an artifact called the Thorned Gauntlet, which gives you, like, I guess, a singular wish that you can use. And as far as I can tell, Mesrielda honestly told Bagsy that she used her wish so that Bagsy could survive a very dangerous situation at the end of the book. So perhaps the gauntlet just then turned around and made her survive forever.
Or did she just say, I hope Bagsy survives?
But then
didn't specify.
Who is the old man in that case?
I don't know. We, right. We have no idea.
It's Todd.
Oh, yes.
What's the other one you wanted to bring
up? The other one is, you mentioned, what's a plot twist that you want to bring up or whatever with mild spoilers? Mm-hmm. The real one is that the main character, the namesake of the book, does not cast a spell the entire book.
Yeah, crazy.
Cool. Very cool.
Cool. Yeah. And frustrating, to be honest.
Agreed.
At the same, not frustrating because it's not frustrating that she didn't cast a spell because it's the wizarding world or whatever.
Right.
It's frustrating for her.
Yeah. I mean, you see all the effort she's putting in and there's just no cast. And furthermore, I really love that while she can't do that, she's excelling in every area of magic that doesn't require that.
Yeah, this is something really impressive. And we talked about this in the interview, but really impressive about the way this book is written is that Bagsy, for whatever reason, cannot do magic, like traditional magic. But if it's a school of magic where she can just put her nose to the grindstone and work hard to get it done, she can do it no problem. Making potions, working in herbology. At one point, she's fixing the school's brooms so that they work better. So anything mechanical, anything that she has to manipulate with her hands, anything that she has to learn the process of, she's very strong at it. And so I'm hoping these books lead to a conflict where it's has the determining factor is the fact that Bagsy can do all this mechanical stuff and she doesn't need to rely on her wand so much. I just think it's a really smart way to write a conflicting character into the wizarding world.
Very fun. I like it a lot.
It's such a unique story arc too, especially, you know, planted right in the middle of the magical world, the wizarding world. So well done.
It is like we said in the interview, right? Harry Potter is born into the most ordinary household. Well, not born into, but grows up in the most ordinary household that exists. And he's a very extraordinary boy. Bagsy is born into a house full of extraordinary people. And she is seemingly the most ordinary girl that can exist at Hogwarts because she can't do magic. It's a really fun take on being in the wizarding world. It's really cool.
It is. Baylor, I'm going to give you a break this week, but Brady, on the other hand,
ooh,
I'd like your prediction.
My first ever prediction.
Wow.
Is Bagsy Beetlehorn a squid?
No.
Damn, I feel like that's probably correct.
No, I predict that she's not a squib. I predict that we're going to learn that there is something to do with that beast at the end of the story that's preventing her magic from working.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I assume that's what the white thing, you know, in her dreams that she's trying to see, you know, but she can't see. Like, I'm assuming that's what that is representing, is her magical ability.
See, and I have this theory, and we'll see, because I forget how Leo pronounced it, but, like, the head Dean Starrett or something that teaches charms that just treats Bagsy terribly the entire semester. She keeps leading on that Bagsy's holding back, and I kind of think maybe she's right. And it's not realized, but, like, the fact that she knows that she can solve stuff in a different way is, like, stopping her from allowing her magic to flow.
Yeah, it's...
And she's not, like, don't get me wrong, the charms professor is not doing a good job in realizing that potential, but I think that later on we might find out that she was right in, like, the worst way.
It's very much, evident that there's untapped potential with Bagsy to this point. We just don't necessarily know what it is yet.
Right.
And I think you're right that her, as well as Fitzsimmons, as well as probably all the professors, realize that. And some of them are very frustrated about it, and others are taking it in stride a little bit better.
I like the story. I like to talk about stories. It's a good time.
Hey, that's what this podcast is.
Yeah.
Just talking about stories.
I mean, you know, we're like 40 episodes in, so I'm glad that you like it, Albert.
Yeah, thanks. We're doing well. Leo's one episode in, so.
Yeah.
One more thing that I wanted to point out.
Yeah.
As we touched in the interview, this is once again another story that is very inclusive of all sexualities. And so just wanted to throw that out there that it's very cool to see. And if you're looking for a story like this, I would definitely check out this series.
It is good to see. And also, Brady, you pointed this out during the interview, I believe, but it's nice to have a character that we know up front rather than something we theorize about or is announced way later on. Because, like, I accept that Dumbledore is gay. That's fine. I don't care. I don't think there was anything saying he wasn't before it was announced. But also, all the theories that have, like, Remus and Lupin having been, like, secretly interested in each other during the time as the Marauders, it's a cool thought, but also it feels like it cheapens the actual story a little bit because it's, like, just making something up after the fact. So I like to see where it's done like this, just no big deal, but right from the start.
Yeah, baked into the beginning, right?
Yeah. Like,
we don't need to get into a huge political discussion.
We've already done that.
My honest opinion is that the best way to normalize equal rights for all sexes and inclusivity of all races and everything else is just to bake it into everything that we do. So that way, when you're reading through, it's not a surprise. It's just there.
Yeah.
And this story does a good job of that. And frankly, it's a good reason to support authors like Leo who are writing stories in this way. Because the more support this story gets, the more exposure it gets. And it's just another way for people who maybe don't know as much or aren't looking as much to have that be part of their normal lives and stuff like that. So, at any rate, this was basically a teaser for what the story has. If you're listening to this and you're part of the AQ Discord, or you're not part of the AQ Discord and you've been listening to our podcast anyways, I would suggest checking this out. Give Leo a little bit of support. As you heard in the interview, he is a very... very prolific writer in the sense that he's trying very hard to make it as an author. And so giving support and feedback is a great way to help him out. And he took a lot of time out of an awkward time of the day for himself to come do this for us and for the audience. So toss a little support his way. That'd be much appreciated. And I think with that being said, we'll see you next Sunday for the next chapter discussion of Alexander Quick and the Lands Below. I don't remember off the top of my head which chapters we're discussing at the moment.
We're a chapter after the
14, 15, 16.
14, 15, and 16. We'll be back next Sunday for our discussion about those chapters. And I'll be spending some background time looking for other fan fictions and authors who I think we should have on the podcast. But until then, I've been Brady.
And I've been Delbert.
And I've been Baylor.
And we'll see you next Sunday.
And send us all your podcast ideas or fanfic ideas.
Good night.